You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And our comrade in geekdom, Monsieur Cookie, is away this week, but he plans to join us next week. In the meantime, we've got lots of stuff that we were going to talk about, a couple of bit of video games news, a bit of film news, and then we wanted to moan about the telly. But I just want to bring up one thing. Paul and I were in Exeter over the weekend, and as a, say, former Japanophile, I was perhaps intrigued by the idea of going into their sort of new Yosushi that's opened up in the last couple of months.
Oh, yeah.
So we went into the Yosushi, and it was just, like, it was just so much tidbits of Japanese pop culture crammed into this space, and I couldn't stop looking. I was just amazed, and of course I actually ate some food.
Was it in a good way? Or was it just a, let's just cram everything Japanese that we possibly can?
I know, I think it actually did work as a you know, kind of business restaurant model.
Yeah.
It was very intriguing, and am I right in thinking that Japanese, like, have conveyor belt type stuff, or
it's a stereotype that's existed for at least 15 years, if not more. They do have sort of sushi or takeaway restaurant, all sorts of takeaway restaurants, sort of quick sort of fast food restaurants that do the conveyor belt system, but it was just so slick in there, and then it was like if you pressed a button to call over a waiter or waitress, and what would it do, Paul?
Well, it's like table number 5,
and a really sort of high pitched kind of male Japanese accent speaking in English. And then the chef would say, like, yo-yo, and, like, somebody would have to respond to them going, yo-yo, and then, like, every 15 minutes or half an hour, there'd just be this sudden welling chorus of,
yo, sushi!
Yo, sushi! It was insane.
I don't know whether that would be awesome or soul-destroying. I'm torn on that.
I couldn't tell.
I presume if you work there.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you're going to hear that, you know, like 10 times a day. And, yeah, I can imagine that be getting irritating, potentially.
Personally, I think it's to catch the customers off guard so that they drop their food on the floor and have to pick up new plates from the conveyor belt.
Easy now.
I'm not saying that perhaps the shouting happened around the same time that I ended up dropping a mochi ball onto the floor, thus wasting a quarter of a dessert plate. But perhaps it did happen, and perhaps that's why it happened. But it went from my mouth to the floor quite quickly. So I then had to pick up a different plate for dessert because I had no dessert, but then that meant that I ended up paying for two desserts. Well, Paul did, even though I'd only had, like, one. But at the same time, though, the food was incredibly tasty, and it was just kind of like, I mean, I could tell in a way that obviously it's kind of like a hyper-real kind of experience of Japanese culture. At the same time, though, it's amazing.
It was very bright, and the conveyor belt actually went all the way around the seats, even though it was, you know.
There are Hornby train tracks that are jealous of this conveyor belt's layout.
Yeah.
I was thinking that because my father-in-law is very into his model trains and things like that. Yeah, I couldn't just imagine his little eyes lighting up.
And the great thing about it is that, you know, you don't have to kind of look at a picture and go, ooh, I fancy that, and be wondering, is it actually going to look as great? Because it's physically there. I mean, admittedly, it's just the cold items that's just going around on the conveyor belt. The warm, or the hot items will actually be cooked for you. So, obviously, they will be hot rather than, you know, cold.
Yes.
It's a unique eating experience, certainly. Anyway, I'm gonna move us on to news. I just had to tell you guys about, first up, we were gonna talk about the rumor going around last week that the Xbox 720, or whatever it will be called once it's actually finally revealed.
The next box.
The next box could see timed exclusives and whatnot from EA. This is a rumor. It would be timed exclusivity to affect titles and download content. Apparently, though, the deal is set to be revealed on April the 26th, which is also the date that they're setting for releasing, well, not releasing, announcing and previewing the next box. Apparently, EA's revealed there's like 15 next generation titles in development. Stuff, though, that we already knew about in development, like Dragon Age 3 and Battlefield 4, because obviously if they're in development now, then it's clear they're coming out on the next generation. At the same time, I can't see something like Dragon Age 3 being a timed exclusive, or Battlefield 4, but maybe that's just me.
Mm. It does seem quite... I'm not entirely sure whether EA's really going to go for that, because it's obviously going to be split in the market.
Yeah.
Which means... potentially less profit to them, obviously.
Yeah. Retro, you were saying something before we started recording that something like this happened with the original Microsoft, not Microsoft, the original Xbox.
Yes, there were quite a few games, like, for example, the Splinter Cell series, which were only on Xbox, and they had a little logo on the top, you know, a yellow stamp. And they did eventually come out on PS2 and GameCube, but only after at least about 6 months, something like that. So I'm wondering if it's... whether it would be too expensive for them to do actual exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see EA biting at the idea of only doing their games in one format. They're a publisher for a reason, and that's to make money.
Yeah.
At the same time, I can't see them even doing timed exclusivity. I mean, as soon as you cut out things like, obviously, all the sports titles and like a couple of the racing games, then it's just kind of like, well, what's left to be sort of timed exclusives? And then it is things like Dragon Age 3, Battlefield 4, another Dead Space, stuff like that, basically. It's like...
Really? Yeah.
Really?
Well, they've been doing DLC this generation, haven't they? Timed exclusive DLC, and Microsoft has been doing that quite a bit on things like, Fallout, the Call of Duties.
Yeah.
I don't play them, but I understand that they've got, you know, some sort of deal with.
Yeah, the Xbox versions tended to get DLC before the PS3 version, certainly.
Yeah.
Of course, some of these do have like flip sides, which is basically when the game comes out on what would be the PS4. You could have slightly extra content. You could have download content included with it. You know, any extra specific items and whatnot included in the game. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, really.
Well, you said PS4 rather than Xbox.
What did I say?
You said PS4.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about this.
It was right in that case. It made sense.
Okay. But yeah, I could see perhaps DLC being, you know, the timed exclusivity, but full titles. Dragon Age 3 would have to be cross-platform, or else there's no... I mean, because people got burned by 2 so much... I can't imagine that. I mean, it'd be like, okay, so we're going to minimise our losses in case everyone hates 3.
I liked 2.
I did as well, but apparently nobody else did. Except for, some new Mongolia or something.
To be honest, I haven't played them, but when watching Emily play them, I've always been more intrigued by 2 because it was more like the Mass Effect system where you actually had a character that talked, you know, rather...
Yeah, Mass Effect 2 was... not Mass Effect 2.
Dragon
Age 2 was far more like a console game, like Mass Effect, than the original Dragon Age. The original Dragon Age seemed like a PC game that had been ported. I know PC gamers who had a little bit of a reaction to, you know, Dragon Age 2 when it came out. But yeah. Anyway.
So timed exclusivity. I think the rumor that it's full titles is perhaps jumping the shark a bit there?
Maybe. I would be really curious how timed it was. If it was You know, I can't see it being 6 months, maybe 3 months.
Unless, of course, there's some new IP that EA's kind of, you know, hoarding around somewhere, and it's going to be that gets time exclusive. But I find it unlikely that existing IP is going to have the game as a time exclusive.
Yeah, I'm a little bit about this.
I mean, I'm not particularly a big fan of the My Sims series, which I believe was also EA, but that was specifically on the Wii. So will they kind of cut that off completely, or would that be, you know, ported to the 720? Well, not ported, but, you know, made for the 720 first, I think.
Maybe it'll only be games which count.
It could be.
I have to admit now that I spent a horrendous amount of time playing My Sims. I'm not entirely sure how it happened. I think I just felt maybe just a little girly for one moment, was blown away by the cutesy graphics, and just that's what convinced me to buy it and spend probably more than 30 hours playing that thing, and then getting no love from my fellow townspeople who, you know, I went and made special bits of furniture and stuff for their houses and everything, and they were just so unappreciative of the game in the end.
I will put my hand up and say I do own the first My Sims on Wii.
Mm.
And I blame Animal Crossing for that.
I think mine would be a similar reason for it existing on our game shelf.
Yeah, and it didn't satisfy the Animal Crossing itch.
I think for once, I'm the sane one.
Well, yeah, but My Sims, it was kind of, unlike Animal Crossing, at least in... My Sims, you could make the furniture, whereas in Animal Crossing, it was always waiting for something intriguing to come into one of the shops.
That damn Nook.
Nook, friggin' Nook.
I'm sorry, but games that they shouldn't be based on, hey, go get a job and, you know, earn lots of money to build your own house and customize this and that. It should be about adventuring or something. Puzzles, logic, it doesn't matter, but it doesn't.
And for some reason, I'm reminded of MMOs and why I usually don't play them.
Yeah.
I ended up referencing Animal Crossing in one of my dissertations. I talked about how it kind of looked at gender roles it was one of many games which I looked at and looked at gender roles within it, and the fact that while you could actually indulge in traditionally female activities, such as buying clothes and picking out furniture and putting up wallpaper, you know, choosing wallpaper and stuff, that kind of thing, any of the sporty characters and stuff, you talk about doing like weightlifting and things like that, sort of male activities, you can actually participate in. I mean, the closest you got was like fishing and bug catching.
Yeah.
So male activities, yet the list of female-led sort of gender activities you could do was quite extensive in comparison. It's just saying, yeah.
And I will just say, you know, that with the whole, you know, that there's something, you know, later with Wii U, but get Animal Crossing out on it.
Yeah.
I will buy it. There we go.
Wow. Is that a promise?
You'd buy the Wii U if a new Animal Crossing was out on it.
Basically, I don't have a 3DS. I'm waiting for Animal Crossing to come out on it.
Okay. And Pikmin 3.
And Pikmin 3, yeah. Well, that's on the Wii U, but yeah, it just go on. Come on, just do it now. But when it comes to exclusives and timed exclusives,
it's all rumour until it's actually announced, I think is the lesson here.
Yeah, we'll wait and see, and I'm more bothered about the hardware.
Yeah.
Because EA, I got, you know, no matter who EA go with anything a timed exclusive, you know, if they do so, I want to get it on the easiest in a format, which in other words will be a console format, and the best version, which will be the, you know, the most impressive hardware, you know, whichever one, you know, shapes up that way. So it's just get it over with, and then I can, you know, wait and see.
I think talking about the Wii U, though, we need to mention that one story you linked to us earlier on Twitter, and that was the fact that Crytek had been developing Crysis 3 for the Wii U. have been developing a port, which was revealed today.
But yeah, now the whole thing with that was that it was supposed to, not only was the engine up and running, but they did have the game up and running. But it the boss of, I'm just trying to find his name now. But yeah, the boss of Crytek said that it was due to them not having a publishing license themselves, and they had to get EA to do it. And for some reason, whether there's a whole issue between EA and Nintendo at the moment that we don't know about.
Yeah.
But there was a lack of will to get it published.
Well, I would say that EA haven't... Yeah, obviously, they haven't put any of their... A lot of the time, non-sports titles to the Wii, the current generation.
That's understandable because...
It was understandable because the Wii is basically a slightly souped-up version of a GameCube.
That's not...
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, it's the focus on the motion controls as well that would have required a lot more work to do. But now that the Wii U's got, you know, a regular conventional control pad as well, it wouldn't be so much of an issue.
Yeah.
Mind you, I suppose we were lucky that at least we got Dead Space... what was it?
Extraction.
Was it Extraction?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dead Space Extraction before the PS3 owners did. You know, that's cool.
Which was a good thing. It might be pretty much a point-and-click slash light gun slash shaky-shaky motion game, but it's good.
Yeah.
It's a good entry into the Dead Space series.
Yeah. I'm still disappointed they go back to the whole Crysis 3. And not that I'm a fan of the Crysis series, I'm just hungry for core games on the Wii U.
That, and I just don't like the idea of publishers going, oh, there's not enough Wii U sales to launch this game out on it, and then wonder why there's not enough games.
Not enough Wii U sales.
Yeah, Wii U sales based on the games that are out. I think self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, it's... I still go out walking, you know, a lot on my Keep Fit thing, and I end up going through a lot of shops, and the choice, especially in supermarkets, which most people will be buying their things, you know, their games from, is awful for the Wii U.
Yeah. I mean,
it desperately needs more things on it.
Our local Sainsbury's, for absolutely ages, the only games that they seemed to stock for the Wii U in the store was Zombie U, was Nintendo Land, and New Super Mario Bros. That was it. That was like literally the top 10. You know, you had like New Mario Bros. At like 1 and 2, or like 2 and 3. And it's like, really? Yeah.
It's absolutely horrific. I was just talking to a friend earlier today, and I was saying, you know, for all it looks like, and for all these things of, oh, we had Crysis 3 running on it, but the publishers didn't want it, and Nintendo weren't bothered about it. And, you know, Aliens Colonial Marines, everyone knows that was a rushed game now. So even if the Wii U version does come out, which I'm pretty much betting it won't now.
Despite Sega's claims previously that it will still come out.
Yeah, I'm feeling better! Bring out your dead. It's just... Yeah, even if that does come out, it's not going to sell well. And I mean, as Wii U owners yourselves, you must be sitting, looking at, you know, the release schedule and, you know, the list of games you were looking forward to and thinking, are these actually going to turn out?
Yeah, it is getting pretty poor so far. I mean, the console, launched, what was it, November?
Yeah.
It's been a good, like, 3 months and whatnot.
Currently, our Wii U has turned into a dance game machine and Skyward Sword machine. Essentially because we didn't obviously want to have the Wii around at the same time where we could play Wii games on it. Paul's been trying to play Skyward Sword again. I've been playing between Just Dance 4 Wii U edition and then the previous ones on there, and Yeah, I'm not actually. I mean, okay, I still have Zombie U to complete. I will admit this, but that game is goddamn scary, and that's why it's not completed yet. I can play it, I can actually get quite far in it, but I find it scary as hell. And so it's kind of like, I like zombie stuff. I mean, I finished reading World War Z today. I like zombie stuff, but Zombie U just scares the hell out of me.
I mean, to be fair, I think our Wii U collection isn't that bad considering the lack of games that are out at the moment. I think we've got about 5 or 6 Wii U games.
Yeah.
We've got like Nintendo Land, New Super Mario Bros. Wii U. We've got Zombie U. We've got Tekken Tag Tournament. We've got Batman, Arkham City.
Armored Edition.
Yeah. Armored Edition. Yeah. Did I say Just Dance 4?
Oh, I've said Just Dance 4.
Just Dance 4. So, yeah, we've got at least 6 Wii U games, and it's, yeah, we've kind of bought up every single one of them that I actually like the look of.
Yeah, because we haven't gone for Club Lops 2 because it's a Club G game.
I am tempted to, simply because it might
it's just something to play.
We've
avoided Mass Effect 3 despite the groovy controls because it's Mass Effect 3. It's the fact that it was released around the same time as the Trilogy Edition on other consoles.
Couple that with the fact that there's download content that isn't actually included in the Wii U version, which, you know, doesn't seem to have like appeared like anywhere, so you're kind of going for incomplete version.
Yeah, and it's part of the story, and it's just like, well, when you know that the story of Mass Effect,
of course, that's EA as well.
Yeah, I think I'm noticing a trend now that you mention it. Yeah, god damn it.
It really is just a, I mean, I know I've sat here and I was going, ah, ha, 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 the Wii U. Although, you know, not literally, but it's just, I would like it to be a success because Nintendo do some bloody amazing games. I'm a big Pikmin fan, big Zelda fan.
I think part of the problem is, I mean, you said to me the other week or something, Paul, that the fact they didn't release really any of their sort of huge big title games on launch because they didn't want to oversaturate things like they did with the Wii with the first year of launch. At the same time, though, they really should have launched, they could have at least had maybe a Zelda. I would have had another Zelda game on launch.
Because... Well, look with the Wii, I was going to say Wii U. It had a new Zelda.
It had Twilight Princess.
Yes, it might have been just a flipped version of a GameCube game with Waggle. But that didn't matter. It was a good game.
Yeah, it was an amazing game, and the Wii control. I mean, I haven't completed, but I have played a lot of it. Paul's completed it. And it's an amazing game. And, well, actually, Skyward Sword have, obviously... I don't understand why they released Skyward Sword when they did was it last year?
Year before.
It was very late, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't... So I got it for Christmas.
Yeah.
But it wasn't last year, it was the year before.
What, 2011?
Yeah, 2011 Christmas. I've actually noticed something with Zelda, and that's basically that if you actually flip the map of Twilight Princess around vertically, so that it's actually the GameCube version, as it were, then it actually does kind of resemble to a certain extent the kind of the placement of places in a lot of the other Zelda maps, like Ocarina of Time and Skyward Sword.
Yeah, but you've also been reading Hyrule Historia?
Yeah, the Hyrule Historia with the official timeline.
There's a timeline.
Oh yes, there is. There is. It splits off into 3 ways from Ocarina of Time.
Of course it does.
It's rather extensive. Includes lots and lots of Zelda games.
Well, yeah.
I'm quite happy with each of them just
as standalone.
Yeah, existing in isolation and just being reimagining.
Mm. Although to be fair,
each time so.
Although, to be fair, I think Wind Waker was the first time where it was like, what, you mean, there was, that, you know, it kind of referenced, like, a previous game, which was obviously Ocarina of Time.
Mm.
It's like, oh, so this is actually kind of set in the same world, but it's kind of centuries or, you know, whatnot apart. I think that is when the Zelda games were almost designed, well, not necessarily designed, but linked up for me.
So, going back to the issue though, obviously, with Wii U, and games they're going to make it sell, because that's the thing, there's a lack of games to make it sell.
I mean, to be fair, there's been reports that Nintendo are going to be announcing, you know, well, obviously, they've got a new Super Smash Bros. In the works, they've got a new Mario, you know, 3D proper Mario game.
Yeah.
A new Zelda in the works, a new Mario Kart in the works.
Now, is that a new Zelda, or is that just the HD version of Wind Waker?
They're going to be bringing out both. So, a brand new Zelda and Wind Waker HD.
What I'd like with the brand new Zelda is if we're thinking about the timeline, is if it continued after Twilight Princess or something. I just want something that, you know, is kind of a bit Twilight Princessy, but isn't, because obviously, you know, you can't sit and sing.
Yeah, I mean, it'll probably have fans speculating as to where it's going to be in the timeline.
I would like something that isn't cel-shaded. Well, I like the style. I'd like something that had the style of Twilight Princess.
Yeah, Twilight Princess's style was actually, you know, quite cool, actually. I thought. I mean, I'm kind of digging Skyward Sword as well, but that's kind of mostly after I've kind of played it quite a bit. Because it's kind of like a cross between cel-shaded Zelda and Twilight Princess style.
I was just thinking that I think the Wind Waker style has been, you know, unfairly judged. I think it worked quite well.
But I'm just not sure about continuing to do it.
It shouldn't be just, you know, the same kind of style. I'm happy with them, you know, rejigging. You know, not only can they rejig the world, but they can also rejig the style, and that helps. The games are so stylized in a lot of ways anyway, they can just do a new, you know, art style as part of it.
Yeah.
But, so basically, yeah, we wish that there were more games for the Wii U. I'm not so bitterly disappointed that Crysis 3 is probably never going to come to it.
By the same token, I think it's just a case of missed opportunities, not necessarily from Nintendo's perspective, but just missed opportunities for actual Wii U owners and people that are actually interested in getting a Wii U.
Yeah.
The stars don't seem to be aligning.
They don't. And I blame EA.
Okay. Maybe we've got some film stuff to talk about. It's not a rumour, but it appears that there's a script writer somewhere, somehow, working on the script for the sequel to Prometheus. Woo. This is according to, was it Noomi, I can't pronounce, Noomi.
Rapace.
I'd say Rapace, but.
Rapace.
Mm-hmm.
It's she, isn't it? I can't remember now.
Yes, it's the main female character.
From Prometheus.
Yeah.
The one that gets sort of intimate with a medical system.
Yeah, the stuff she goes through in that film, it had me wincing.
Yeah.
Mm. And it was like, I don't have those, and I'm Jew. Oh.
To be fair, though, I think you know, the Alien films have always been, quite strong with the female characters.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Ripley was actually originally kind of written as kind of a man, and they cast a woman, and it really did work. And
I'll just say, I'll hark back there to Mass Effect and the whole femship.
Mm.
Yes.
With all the motion capture and such was done with a man. And it's only the model that's changed.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's why she's, you know, the whole, you know, sitting with, you know, legs apart and looking quite soldierly.
Actually, it
was a half-assed job, and why they didn't have a proper, you know, official femship face until the third one, which is insane if you think about it.
Absolutely.
To be honest, I don't exactly sit ladylike, so, you know, having...
I know, but it's the whole thing of, oh, a lady sits like a lady. No. don't be daft. Just have someone doing exactly the same thing, because after all, they're a soldier first and foremost.
Yeah. And if you chose like the paths where she's come from a military upbringing and stuff, then it's like really feminine manners time for probably not. If actually most of her backgrounds, other than I think, so there's the colonist one, but if you're sort of essentially street urchin type background, or you're the military background, probably not time for sitting ladylike at all.
Yeah.
But going back to Prometheus.
I just thought it was relevant to...
Yeah. I suppose there's a lot of people out there who are probably terrified of the idea of there being a sequel to Prometheus because it had such mixed receptions last year when the film was released.
Yeah, maybe it's because the Pope has, resigned. They're thinking, yes, we can actually finally get away with a sequel.
We can have a space Pope.
A space Pope
that grows from a jar.
For those of you who are unaware, a paper or reviews magazine that's printed in the Vatican disapproved of Prometheus when it was released last year in Italy. And as I previously noted, in the same week, Magic Mike was released. However, that got past Vatican scrutiny. So aliens that question our existence, and okay, perhaps the foundations of religion, not so great apparently as cinematic fodder. Films about guys stripping. There's a joke here. I'm not going to carry through with it, but there's a joke here.
I heard it was very popular with Cardinal O'Brien.
You know why?
Why?
It's actually because the guys are stripping rather than marrying.
I suppose.
That's okay.
Yeah.
They were just celebrating God's creation.
Mm. All over your face.
There's probably a lot of people who also...
Sorry.
That's a good thing we're not rated as universal for everyone. the thing about having a sequel to Prometheus, so people didn't like it because they found it confusing, apparently, and there wasn't enough exposition for them. And I was all right with the sort of level of mystery or sort of not having stuff explained to me all the time that the film had.
I was happy with that. I'm, like I said at the time when we were talking about Prometheus, I'm happy with oddness, because after all, in the original Alien, there's a hell of a lot which is not explained anyway.
Yeah, and it's a slow burner as well. It doesn't go straight into the action.
It
takes a while to build up, and I like that about the original Alien. If you wanted Aliens Alien, then you might as well just go and watch Aliens or any of the AVP films, though perhaps not Requiem, because that would be cruel.
Yes, the whole, we could nuke this entire area, but let's hunt down the aliens first. What's that? Oh, yeah, the aliens got loose. Okay, nuke the area. Why didn't you do that in the first place?
Because something.
Oh, no. I've got to get this off my chest before we move on to our next film story. So, as I mentioned earlier, I finished reading World War Z today, and I then had flashbacks to the latest trailers for the film of World War Z.
And were they similar? Were they in the spirit of it?
No, I would say they're not very much in the spirit of it. Felnort sort of said to me probably a couple of things about it, and I was just like, I should probably try not to think that this is a film about World War Z. I mean, it's the extent of, like, they seem to have just bought the license for the book so that they could get at the name.
To be fair, though, you're basing that on the trailers, and the trailers aren't always...
Yeah, but the trailers are... And the fact that they're focusing on one guy... In the trailers, yeah. I think they've made it quite clear, though, that it's not about all the different characters that you get in the book. That it's focusing on Brad Pitt's character's journey through the zombie apocalypse.
Not sure whether you noticed, but they were actually filming at one point down in Falmouth. Apparently Brad Pitt was not there at the time. There was a local media storm about all them wanting extras and, you know, tons of people coming down to, you know, try and act like zombies and whatnot.
Refugees.
So that to me kind of implies that what was filmed there was going to be some other kind of storyline to it, to me. Well, so it might be that it's just the trailers that just aren't really, you know, showing what the film's going to be like. It's showing basically Brad Pitt, action.
It's quite possible, but...
Then if it was a multi-narrative film, they would be showing in the trailers that it's a multi-narrative film, like they've been doing with Cloud Atlas.
To be fair, I think there's been certain times where films have... Well, film trailers have pretty much lied about a film, almost.
When they've thought that, oh no, people think it's going to be a lot of characters, we're not going to be able to sell this. Best make them think it's a single one, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean...
They're not going to like this because it's a bit introspective. Let's put all the explosions in the trailer and put some bombastic music over it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember my dad turning around and saying that in the trailer for Insurrection, as in Star Trek Insurrection, the non-Star Trek film, they actually had like a clip or two of the Enterprise battling something. And that was clips from... First Contact. So they chopped in stuff from the previous film to stick in the trailer to sell Insurrection, which, you know,
it wouldn't be the first.
It's pretty
time.
Much dishonest. So I don't hold complete stock in trailers.
Yeah, but have we heard any other talk of kind of like other actors or actresses having big roles in World War Z? Because I don't think we really have, and that's the thing, with the strength of characters that are actually in the novel, you'd be talking more, perhaps, about the other, well, not necessarily stars, but certainly the other characters that are being in the film, because the book's an oral history of a zombie apocalypse.
And I can see executives sitting in a room saying, we don't think that this multi-narrative would sell.
To be fair,
we think people want to root for a single character, so therefore, what if we do this? You know,
but isn't it meant to be Brad Pitt's production company that is making this film?
Yeah.
So
they got the license.
It could be that Brad Pitt just basically employed a load of, non-established actors, and they just don't want to stick them. Like predominantly on the trailer because
but they were yeah but they nobody awful. Had that kind of fears when they did Watchmen, I don't think that there is going to be anything like the novel.
All right.
Moving on to four rooms.
I will just say before we do, it's back with my old problem with film adaptations of if you're getting a nice meaty book. To adapt, either make a ridiculously long film or just spend the probably well over $100 million and do it as a series.
Yeah, somebody suggested to me that it needs to be a HBO series.
Yeah, it's just please do it that way rather than a film.
Although I think one of the problems is that, stuff still gets cut. I mean, look at what's meant to have happened with... Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
now I've heard, after the first series, it does start to diverge quite dramatically.
But...
And I think to a certain... Is the Walking Dead the same as well?
I wouldn't be able to say about that. I haven't read any of the Walking Dead comics. I haven't had the chance. But at the same time, World War Z, it's short. I think technically it's shorter than, say, Life of Pi.
Right.
Yeah, it's less than 350 pages. So it's kind of like, well, you've got so much that you could play around with. And also you didn't have to do everyone's narrative. You could just take specific sides and just kind of work with that. The thing is that it's from the perspective, so it's oral accounts of what happened during the apocalypse as recorded by this one dude. But at the same time, if it means that Brad Pitt's the guy that's collecting all the narrative histories, and it's a film.
I think it was hinted at that in the trailer.
Yeah, but that means though that there's a whole. That's not actually anything to do with the book in a way, because you don't know what's happening to that guy in any of the book, really, other than the fact that what has become that book isn't actually accepted in the book's own world, if that makes sense. Because he basically helped write an official report into the whole thing. And all the narratives that are in the book are narratives that didn't make it into the official report.
Isn't it for the UN or something
like that? Something like UN, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically an account of what the hell happened.
For various sort of groups and individuals that were relevant to the to everything from beginning, middle, and end, basically. Yeah. So anyway, more rumors and hearsay because that's what we need this week. Apparently, nobody's got any real news. You know, it's just more rumors. Basically, because this is obviously since Star Wars Episode 7 was announced, everyone's going, oh, you know, the original cast, are they going to come back? Are they going to come back? Do they want to come back? Blah, blah. Nothing's confirmed. It's all rumors at the moment that somebody like Harrison Ford might be in it. And sort of like Simon Pegg's also denying that at the moment that he's in talks to be anything in it. Yeah, just because Abrams linked doesn't mean that Simon Pegg comes running with it as well.
But yeah, I thought that was a bit weird.
Also bearing in mind that, I mean, Simon Pegg obviously starred in Spaced, which I believe it was like first episode of the second series or something like that, was basically...
So Tim, Phantom Menace was 6 months ago.
Exactly, exactly. So I'm not entirely sure whether Simon Pegg would want to have a hand in potentially destroying the franchise all over again or... something. I don't know, maybe Simon Pegg would actually be a good addition. I don't know.
But it's kind of, what role would he play?
Well, it could be anything. I mean, it depends whether, well, because I presume Episode 7 would be set, like, quite far after the events of Episode 6. I'd imagine, anyway.
Nobody knows at the moment. It's all hearsay. But it's just like that, you know, it's like, it's, I mean, is Mark Hamill going to come back, you know, as well for like anything? But, you know, because it's like, well, he's kind of pulling himself back from a lot of work at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, considering that he's basically retired from doing the voice of the Joker.
No!
Which was announced last year.
I know, but he's an awesome Joker.
He is a very awesome Joker. But, you know, he's not doing as much work as he previously did because, you know, he's getting on a bit, you know, that kind of thing. Not sure about our thingy that plays Leia.
Carrie Fisher.
That's the one.
I don't know what she's up to. I mean, Harrison Ford, yeah, maybe.
He's, yeah, obviously he's...
he's probably the oldest out of the bunch, actually. And obviously, like, there was... I'm not sure if it was rumour or confirmed that, like, oh, Samuel L. Jackson would like to come back somehow, you know.
Son of...
thingy that played young Obi-Wan, and it's like, really?
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I don't think really anyone who's previously been in the Star Wars franchises, unless they were an extra somewhere, is going to be making an appearance in the new ones.
No.
Because... yeah,
maybe they could all be gathered around a campfire and say, hey, do you remember that time when, in the future, which, oh no, we've got things the wrong way around, never mind, cut!
Or they're all the sort of Blue Force ghost things standing around a campfire.
Wow, that's a lot of ghosts.
That's a lot of freaking ghosts. Maybe they'll sing Kumbaya or something as the film...
with Ewoks.
Yeah, with Ewoks. Or somebody makes, like, a Spaceballs joke or something as well, you know.
I'd just love to see, like, Anakin and Obi-Wan, like, you know, fighting it, you know, in the afterlife. It should be like, yeah. No, this would be a lot better if you hadn't turned to the dark side.
I know, you what, they'd probably be setting everything with, like, rock, paper, scissors or something. Or rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock.
Spock. Yeah. Actually, well, I think what
damn it, Anakin, you always choose Spock.
You know, you'd have Obi-Wan being all, you know, mellow, and then you'd have Anakin hopping along on one leg and saying, some bastard stole my leg again. It's you, Obi-Wan, isn't it? And you could run bored.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all rumours. I think we're going to now safely troop away from this. So...
yeah, that whole thing is... everyone's going mad with the whole idea of them being, you know, them doing new films and possible spin-offs and things like that. So we basically won't know anything that's there until they've finished doing them.
I mean, it's going to be quite interesting because no matter how good or bad the films are, they're not going to have the nostalgia factor that the originals have for a lot of Star Wars fans.
Well, there are only three Star Wars films.
Exactly, and I mean, those were made, you know, ages ago. They have that nostalgia factor to them, so they're
This also means that they're probably going to have to do some crazy arse things in order to get new converts to the entire thing. The sort of gimmicks and stuff.
Yeah, a brand new Jar Jar.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
I, of course, think part of the problem with, the whole nostalgia thing is the fact that nowadays, obviously, we have kind of computer generation and all this, technical whiz and know-how and whatnot, and the visual effects people are still not getting, recognition for their award.
Which is absolutely insane.
I know, it's especially with, so many films actually utilising CG on such a large scale.
Would you like to explain the green avatars that people might have been seeing recently?
Yeah, well, that's basically pretty much a kind of, semi-boycott, just type, protest recognition thing to illustrate the fact that, visual effects people, despite the fact that they have some pretty damn tough jobs, that they just do not get any recognition. And it, once again, it's this auteur thing where it's like the director is the only person that, makes a film happen. Really?
Like Ang Lee?
Yeah.
Those tigers, they just happen. But by magic.
Yeah.
It's a spontaneous tiger.
I really do just dislike auteur theory because of this. Norturkin was originally described as somebody that makes their mark on whatever they're producing, almost like a signature. So Alfred Hitchcock, he would have like certain themes and recurring actors and this type of thing. And a lot of, a lot of directors and production companies use the same kind of pool of people to do many characters, same kind of themes, same similar jokes and whatnot. And it's, with the video effects, that's more done on a, kind of film by film basis rather than anything else, but they still don't get recognition.
The only difference there I can think of would be with Pixar.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's because the VFX people are basically the people doing, making the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, even like with Stars now, because, obviously we've got stuff like Toy Story, that's voiced by, Tim Allen and, Tom Hanks. And it's got, all sort of, like sequels, for example, had Kelsey Grammer, had, Jones.
But tying this into the whole Star Wars situation, by the time Star Wars Episode 7 comes out, Abrams has been involved. He's a big name of film. He's the kind of person who could actually be kind of saying to somebody to groups like the Thingy Academy that just, puts forward all the Oscars nominations and everything, to, expand how the VFX industry is recognised.
I mean, especially Abrams at the moment, because he's doing so many different things. You have to question just exactly how much input that has into absolutely everything. The fact that, he obviously, not necessarily he does, but, he's got writers, he's got, producers, he's got, all these other, massive selection of people around him to, do his work. And, a director, they direct the actors mostly.
I think when it gets to that kind of scale, it's just getting people they trust.
Yeah, I mean, yes, they can sometimes have a hand in editing, but yeah, I think directors can sometimes be just
they're not necessarily the ones that really really make the film. Especially if it's something that needs lots of special effects in order to convey what is happening on the screen.
I was just thinking there to tie that in with Star Wars. Mm. One of the best sequences in Episode 3 is the big droid attack on the planet.
Mm.
Now, apparently the deal with that was that Lucas pretty much said, hands off, right, you guys just go and do your thing to the visual effects teams. And it was more or less Was it Industrial Light? I presume it was Industrial Light and Magic.
I'd imagine so, yeah.
Yeah.
They pretty much made the entire battle.
Yeah.
And directed it. And that whole section of the film is far more dynamic and far more in keeping with Star Wars action sequences. As a consequence, now, with how George Lucas seems to direct, which is to just... See, that's... Look up at the stick. Yes, that's like a dinosaur thing. Just talk to it. Can you imagine what that sequence would have been like if his fingerprints were all over it?
Mm.
It's just... These people need far more recognition of what's going on. The amount of effort that they put into all these things. A lot of these directors... owe their success to the VFX people.
Yeah. I mean, did James Cameron, you know, sort of like instruct their visual effects people about exactly, you know, each tiny little footprint, you know, making the spark on the plants and, you know, the...
Whatever, you know, the face. Avatar.
Yeah, in Avatar. You know, the entire face and, like, everything.
So funny you should mention James Cameron there, because I saw a fantastic picture. You know the famous bit at the end of Titanic with Kate Winslet on, talking to Leonardo DiCaprio as, you know, he's sort of sinking.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Did you know she was sat in a little paddling pool?
Okay.
I'll see if I can put it on the Nerds Assemble Twitter feed when we're finished, but yeah, it's just that moment when you realise the end of Titanic was in a paddling pool. And it's just that's a fantastic example of the VFX people there, because they took that and made it into that moment.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on now to our final topic of tonight. I said we were gonna talk about telly. We may have hinted at this issue a bit last week. I was talking about Primeval being cancelled again. Yeah. And basically, we want to look at discuss what the long-term effects have been of the main sort of five UK channels saying that they won't buy in as many US shows as they did pre-recession. Because basically, unless you've got something like Sky, what's available for you to view has actually become kind of limited if you're actually looking for genre shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless it's kind of crime drama, in which case you've got all the CSIs and Law and Orders.
And plenty of homegrown stuff as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but half of that doesn't count.
Yeah, just another Midsummer's Murder.
Oh, Jesus.
Tack it on there or something. You know,
it was The Immigrant.
Well, there's talk of... I think there was talk last year of bringing Jonathan Creek back, just to...
Now that everybody knows that Alan Davies doesn't, you know...
I think...
Doesn't have the intelligence of Jonathan Creek.
Yeah, sort of his reputation for QI might perhaps ruin this entire possibility.
Although they could always make a joke about that, you know, to like have his assistant going, who do you think you are, Stephen Fry?
Or he can say something and then the little woo.
it can
all be solved by Stephen Fry at the end of every episode.
In case you think that we're imagining the lack of sci-fi and fantasy shows on the BBCs, the ITVs, the Channel 4s, the Channel 5s, because I'm saying this in plural because, of course, they've all got their multiple digital-only channels, which also sort of show genre shows. It's not all in our heads, actually, and we'll be linking to this in the post. But certainly the BBC said several years ago that they were going to be buying in less from overseas. Mm. This is a result of obviously budget cutbacks, I think, in light of the recession, the fact that it was putting a strain on the license fee and sort of how they were budgeting and stuff, and the fact they were told to make cutbacks, essentially. And one of the things that got packed was overseas imports, which is why the amount of repeats on our tellies now has grown to probably, I would say, dangerous levels. And certainly repeats of really crap shows like Bargain Hunt and other reality TV nuggets that cost hardly anything to make, actually, in comparison to a drama, or apparently cost hardly anything to make in comparison to sort of licensing a show. If you think about it, the last American sort of, I'll say sort of sci-fi, those sci-fi series that the BBC probably heavily invested in would have been Heroes.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you've got the sort of the bit of the homegrown talent with Being Human. But obviously, Being Human isn't as long a season as Heroes. And oh, and that one that they cancelled after it won a BAFTA that had the
Fringe. Fades.
Fades.
Oh, Fades as well. Yeah. Didn't Dirk Gently win an award?
It might have done. I can't remember.
It also got cancelled.
Yeah, I just remember the fact that, like, Fades, like, you know, it, like, won a BAFTA, then with, like, weeks or less of that happening, and then it was like, BBC cancels it. I was just like, wow, way to go. What is it?
Yeah, it's a clap.
Too much genre television, obviously, on your tellies, despite the fact that if you think about sort of, like, the late 90s to early 2000s, what the BBC Two schedule used to be like in the evenings, it was glorious. You know, you'd have Buffy one night, Star Trek another night, flipping Farscape another night.
It was 6 o'clock, BBC Two.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I miss those evenings. That was telly worth coming home to.
Yeah.
Fudge the news, fudge friggin' EastEnders or any other soap operas that might be on later on in the evening. 6 o'clock, BBC Two was awesome.
Yeah, I think the only thing recently that I've had of decent quality is Doctor Who.
Yeah. And that's homegrown. And again, though, it's the fact that obviously we're looking at, what, like 13 episodes a series.
I think we're probably going to get slaughtered by the fact that, you know, Merlin and whatnot. But I couldn't get into Merlin, Robin Hood, or, you know, any of those other...
Had stuff like... Because that's like the Sunday tea time stuff they used to do. Like the thing with the little... like the Box of Delights or the... what was the thing with the dude that lived in the sand? And the kids.
Hey.
There was a thing. It was based on the book.
Stig in the Dump?
It wasn't Stig in the Dump, but that's not one. But no, there was like a thing about this creature, this little creature imp thing that lived in a sandpit. And there was a bunch of Victorian kids. I really can't remember the name of it, but it was a thing. It was one of those various Sunday tea time dramas that was an adaptation of a children's novel.
That, I don't know if I remember that.
Yeah, it sort of 90s sort of deal. But basically, they had that. So really, the Merlin and the Robin Hood and all that, that's essentially them taking what they used to have on the Sunday late afternoon to Saturday evenings, because it's still a little pre-Watershed. So, you know, it's still pretty toned down. So they've shifted that. They haven't actually added to the science fiction offerings, because Being Human... Well, I mean, that's ending... You know, the current series, that's Series 5, is the last series of Being Human. So that's going to be ending soon.
And I've seen some of that, and my God, is that the best we can do?
Well, we've only watched the first two series of Being Human, and we sort of liked it. I mean, we'll probably pick up the rest cheap. I mean, I suppose Channel 4 kind of helped a bit with the fact that at least they've had Misfits for the last couple of years.
I've yet to get around to watching that.
We actually really like Misfits, if you can get past all the swearing and sex and that. It's actually quite a good series.
That's half the appeal.
Wow.
I was going to say, those things don't bother me. It's just if that's all that's selling it.
It's got strong dramatic appeal.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's very well written.
It's like, for some reason, you know, if someone gets their arm shot off by, you know, another person's heat ray or, you know, whatever, I don't expect the characters to say, "Bother! That's a little irksome."
Mind you, okay. Looking though at the overall landscape of genre TV on UK channels, so the main five have been kind of reducing things. Channel 5's dabbled a little bit in kind of buying the odd thing. I mean, obviously Channel 5 managed to snag Walking Dead, but that's not firsthand because it shows on FX.
Which is a minority Sky channel.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Almost all the genre TV has moved onto Sky. I mean, because it's not really like Virgin owns a whole lot of its own channels. It's mostly Sky-backed channels that... Although the shows have moved on to, and it's bloody annoying.
Although, strangely, E4 seems to have this thing about American sitcoms.
Yeah, that's weird, except for that point when they lost Friends.
Yeah, you know, so they've obviously got Big Bang Theory, which has replaced Friends in being...
And How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother. There's stuff like Rules of Engagement, Two Broke Girls, The New Normal, which is like that drama.
Yeah, so American comedy is doing well on regular channels.
Well, on E4. I don't think it does quite as well on
regular channels. But again, it never did very well on the other channels besides Channel 4 American sitcoms.
I think a lot of the time there's an audience, and now things like E4 are on Freeview, and pretty much everyone's got Freeview.
Yeah.
Because weren't they switching off the last analog broadcast in the UK recently? Recently?
Have we completely gone digital now then, as a country?
I think we have.
I think we have, yeah.
Okay.
But the problem is, looking at the whole Sky pictures, so you've got various channels across Sky, between sort of obviously the main sort of Sky One, Sky Atlantic,
FX. Fox as it is now.
Fox,
yeah.
FX.
There's Watch.
Yes, I've Watch. Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, but the Sci-Fi Channel doesn't really count.
But
tragically.
Yeah, but across all of those, you've got various genre shows being shown between sort of fantasy to science fiction. But it's all, you know, that's all subscription telling that. And I resent the idea of having to pay on top of my license fee and having TV ads thrown at me an amazing amount.
Yes.
More than £26 a month, because you have to sign up to you can't sign up to the basic package and get anywhere really near these genre shows. You've got to make sure you get at least, I think, two packages probably.
They're all included in the additional.
Yeah. So you're looking at per month more than the price of a series box set.
Yeah.
To get hold of everything.
The
thing is though is that it's not even as though, you know, what say for example America is outputting is, you know, bad. You know, look, if you look at Breaking Bad, you know, that's never been shown on
UK telly. It's only been available on, was it Netflix or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Dexter's now not being shown, despite the fact that in series.
Yeah, but the FX or Fox or whatever hands on it, yeah, but it's not showed on mainstream anymore.
True, but I mean, no, the US is actually churning out quite a few fairly decent shows now.
Yeah, and it's annoying though that Sky. Just kind of jumps in and just snags stuff like House ended up on Sky One, for instance. That annoyed the hell out of me after Channel 5 had been showing it first for ages. And as it became popular, Sky swoops in, grabs it, and it's just like, oh, thanks. I just don't like the fact that somehow we don't have... Either we've got schedulers who don't care about genre TV, which actually doesn't...
That's definitely an issue there.
Yeah, I think they just don't care about buying stuff. In the meantime, they're quite happy to bloody well put a bazillion repeats of Bargain Hunt on and Come Dine With Me.
Oh, and Jesus Christ.
Other annoying sort of reality TV swill.
Not to mention X-Factor, I'm a Celebrity.
All the various things I never watch.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that all of the TV schedule should be replaced by genre television. That's insane. At the same time, could we please have some decent stories on the telly? Mm. Because that's what genre TV gives you. It gives you a dramatic range of storytelling. Because within genre stuff like science fiction and fantasy, you'll get elements of other genres playing out really well. Like, you could have an episode of something and it'll have, like, crime elements to it. Yeah, another episode and it'll have elements of a rom-com to it. It's genre telly, but it can take in a huge wealth of other genres in order to portray its story.
I mean, like you were saying, where, you know, the part of the 90s, where BBC Two at 6 o'clock would have things like Buffy, Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah, I miss those.
And you'd have, just thinking about it, in Buffy, you'd have all the, you know, a hell of a lot of variation in story.
Yeah.
And in Star Trek. Now, the problem is, you're talking about a time when you had four for most of the time, and until Channel 5, which virtually no one could actually get. Across half the country, terrestrial channels, and you had that choice. Now, with us turning to digital, we've got over 30 channels.
And we still don't have that much choice,
actually. And we don't have that choice now.
No, because there's hardly any genre TV on the rest of the Freeview channels. Except for crime.
Yeah,
for some reason.
One of the reasons BBC Two would buy those series in would be because they'd wait months until after, you know, US broadcast, and they'd buy them in cheap. They were effectively just filling airtime because it was cheaper to buy. I remember hearing at the time something like an episode of Quantum Leap would cost maybe about £50,000. This was in the 90s, mm-hmm. you know, for them to buy the rights of a single episode. Whereas, say, a half-hour edition of the news would cost over £1 million. Because they'd have to have the outside broadcasts, they'd have to, you know, buy stories in from elsewhere, they'd have, you know, live links from around the world, and you know, all that kind of thing. But it would get carried, you know, the cost would be distributed.
Yeah.
But it was always US imports, which most of the time would happen to be, you know, genre, because those were the ones, you know, with a bit of a hook, would be cheap. And do you remember ITV Nighttime?
No, it's a bit...
When it was just overnight and they'd show a lot of US sitcoms, they'd show things like Married with Children and ALF and things like that. They'd show them in the dead of the night so you could record them. Oh, and things like Highlander, War of the Worlds. Those would be on, you know, your local ITV station. But they'd be showing at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, because they were cheap.
Mm.
And now you've got the situation, is it because of the internet? Are they scared of the whole people will not watch because they can just go and, you know, download a torrent?
But see, this is the thing, because at the same time, the authorities are increasingly cracking down on people who torrent. It will be getting to the stage soon where, unless an amnesty is called, the IPs are going to be having their arms, ISPs rather, going to be having their arms twisted to hand over the details of people who are clearly torrenting. And because they are technically breaking the law, and the government, unless you've been using a sort of like a, was it a VPN service or something? You're basically going to be fucked. And so at the same time, though, nobody's doing anything to enable legitimate options of watching US shows without falling into the monopoly of Sky.
Ooh.
I mean, and that is, it is a monopoly because, quite frankly, Virgin isn't available here where
Virgin is a bit of a dead loss.
Yeah.
Anyway, with its with its coverage especially. We can't get it up here.
And plus the fact that actually a lot of the channels that it has, actually it's kind of half buying off of Sky anyway, and then Virgin's been bought recently anyway, so what the future of Virgin Media is exactly, I'm not sure, but they've been bought by another company.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no competition to Sky, which annoys me, and I don't want to be giving money to Sky. I mean, oh yes, okay, I want to watch my genre telly at the same time that I object to the idea of buying into a monopoly. At least you're dealing with, like, the main channels that everyone can get for free. Those are all very distinct different entities.
With Sky, your only hope is if the series you're watching will eventually end up on Sky 2, which is also on Freeview. Or is it Sky 3?
Sky 3 doesn't really...
No, it's not on there anymore.
Is it Pick TV it's called now? I'm sure.
That would explain why it's got things like Stargate.
Yeah.
Alright, okay.
But then that's not reliable for watching stuff because they don't show Series 3. Well,
no, it's not, because it's effectively the dumping ground, isn't it? It's what's incredibly cheap. We can get money out of just from advertising.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, not even Sky actually buys up like everything as well.
No.
So there's still, you know, stuff.
Well, no, but they have bought up Breaking Bad. So.
Yeah, but they there's still stuff produced from obviously America, and you know what about like. There's bound to be like Australian sitcoms, Canadian sitcoms.
Australian sci-fi.
Yeah.
Let's think about it. I mean, Farscape was very Australian, actually. well, in its origins.
Wasn't that like a joint?
It was a joint venture, yeah. But it.
But it was very Aussie.
It was very Aussie.
Oh yeah, so, definitely.
So you know, I just don't want to be giving money to Sky, and it's not because of the medical condition. It's because I would be paying out more than the amount of episodes I'd essentially be watching in a month in order to watch those episodes. Mm. Plus, at the same time, getting access to a whole load of the channels that I've already got access to because I pay my TV license. Well, actually, you know, that's insane.
A bit. We should have a bit like a taxpayers' alliance, but a TV, you know, paid alliance.
I'll just say, you know, if there are any hackers listening at the minute, if you could hack into the National Lottery and, you know, let us win it after a few, you know, weeks roll over. If you could just rig it a little bit, we promise to set up a TV channel on Freeview.
God, but then, I mean, that's one of the annoying things about Freeview, though. If you had a plan for a channel that would obviously be genre-friendly, the amount it costs to buy the spectrum that you need to broadcast, the figures are actually quite astronomical, and then obviously you need to then buy your series, then obviously buy the hardware and connections you need to broadcast everything,
I have to say, to actually, maybe the, you know, the spectrum and the rights to the broadcast channel and things like that, okay, but what, you know, seeing, especially things like ITV3 and 4. Seeing how they're run and how haphazard they are, I think they're ran from a 486 in someone's shed.
The standards perhaps can slip sometimes. Just thinking back to the sort of internet side of things, like obviously Netflix and the film can't get hold of a lot of things, and also the fact that was it a deal that I think we might have mentioned this, where Sky did with Disney the other week, so there's going to probably be now a Disney movies channel on Sky.
Yeah.
So Love Film, Netflix, it won't really be getting Disney movies at all anytime soon because of this deal.
Christ.
You know, and then it's like, and then the fact that Hulu decided to, which is a big service in the US,
I was just going to mention, you know, if any American, if we have any American listeners, I presume we do.
Apparently we've got some.
Yeah, if they're thinking, why don't they just watch things on Hulu? It's so much easier. It's like, yeah, about that.
Yeah, they had to abandon plans because Broadcaster Talks collapsed back in sort of, was it last year, year before last? And, you know, they haven't come back since. So, you know.
I remember, you know, trying to watch stuff on Hulu, you know, basically because, you know, for example, the stuff that was actually shown in the UK was usually shown about 6 months after the US.
Mm.
Yeah. And the one thing about the internet is that it's very immediate. You know, you know, you could be, you know, waiting for the premiere to, you know, a new series, and, you know, you're going along on the internet and all of a sudden you see spoilers from that day.
Yeah, it becomes really hard to avoid spoilers when there's a huge gap between broadcasts.
Yeah, and that's one thing Sky with Sky Atlantic has in its favour, in that they will show new episodes pretty much the first available day after they're shown in the US. For example, I think Game of Thrones is being shown at the end of this month and on the last day of the month in the US. We're getting it on the 1st of April.
Meanwhile, I've sadly probably stumbled into several season 3 spoilers for The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And that's because FX gets it first, or Fox or whatever, and Channel 5's probably...
And people will chat about it.
Yeah, and Channel 5's not getting it till, like, May, maybe?
Well, not to mention, you know, Americans obviously talk about it on the internet, and it's not even like you have to go into, like, discussions about it. You know, you can just basically get memes on your Facebook.
Pictures posted.
Yeah, pictures posted, and it's like, what? I really wish...
It's like, no. Oh, bollocks.
I mean, there's some people that say that, oh, you shouldn't worry about spoilers and stuff. But if it's been written into the style of the script that you're not meant to know about a piece of information so that you can then work up to the big reveal, which actually happens in pretty much any story... know, unless you're very good at reading the signs and like spoiling things for yourself when you're watching an episode, which I inadvertently do sometimes. But
I don't personally mind spoilers, but I can understand why people get annoyed with them.
It's suspense. If you have the spoiler, any suspense that would have been worked into an episode, suddenly for things that are quite drama based, like The Walking Dead, it becomes completely irrelevant because the drama kind of lacks then when you know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, just waiting for this character to die or this character having an affair, and it's like, yeah. This would have been so great if I hadn't have known this was coming.
I mean, you think about the amount of people that don't like being told that there's a twist in a film. The very knowledge of knowing there's a twist.
Mm.
Yeah, I basically want to know as little as possible about anything. I can only imagine how furious I would have been if someone had told me about that moment in Bioshock.
Mm. Or let's go back even further. Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything else about that because, there could still be some people who haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's worth watching. Mm. It's a good film, even though Mr. Shyamalan.
Yeah, it was like, what was his last good film? I do like Breakable a bit, but it's weird making an entire film based upon the first act.
Yeah, but... So I can I can appreciate that when it's set up so that you need an epiphany to go in a story, and then suddenly things make more sense, or just surprise death in not the series, but obviously people die in the Walking Dead game.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I didn't read up on it because it's a very powerful moment when something, you really don't expect it and you go boomf.
I downloaded the first episode when it was available for free over Christmas.
Yeah.
I've still got to play that. But
play it, it's good.
Yeah. So go back. So basically, genre TV on the UK has been pretty fudged over since sort of like the recession really took hold. Like, people thinking, high ups like, it's effective cost cutting if we don't buy in shows from overseas, except for these crime ones, and then this little bit here, and let's get in the Kardashians, and let's have this little bit here, and let's get in some Jersey Shore somewhere, and we'll buy in this bit of crap, and it's like
I heard Kardashians there, and I thought, DS9.
That would be more entertaining.
Yeah,
it would be.
Yeah, but it's just genre shows just being brought in, and it's annoying. It's like, apparently, people are watching them. I'm sorry. What's the fact that we seem to have a resurgence of sort of geek? Well, not even a resurgence of the almost acceptance of geek and nerd culture to the mainstream populace in terms of the products it produces. I mean, loads of people went and watched Avatar. That was a science fiction film. It wasn't all geeks and nerds in the audience, but I would say the ratio of geeks to nerds of general audience in screenings for Avatar, the nerds were the minority to general sort of populace. Let me think about something else. Batman, The Dark Knight Rises last year, same again. The idea that it's something genre doesn't sell at the moment is a stupid idea.
The thing is, though, is that kind of getting off the idea of buying in US shows, but if we made more UK series rather than relying on stuff.
But apparently that's still too expensive.
But the thing is, though, is that they can actually stick that on DVD, so they will actually get money back from that.
That was always the the reasoning and the madness of the BBC dropping when they did, because they didn't touch sci-fi for years.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But they made things like Day of the Triffids, and I'm not talking about the recent one, but the original series.
Yeah.
And the thing was, they sold really well around the world. They made good money from those. But because you had people in the high echelons in the UK saying, Well, it didn't do well here. It didn't do as well as we thought. It's far more expensive to make an episode of something like that than it would be to make, you know, a cop drama or a soap. We'll make those instead.
The thing is,
you can make your money back.
The thing is, you can't really make your money back on, you know, stuff like Bargain Hunt, or, you know,
Who Wants to Be
a Millionaire, or, you know, all these other types of reality based shows.
The only way you can is if you can just, you know, repeat them ad nauseum and sell and flog them cheap to, you know, repeat channels.
I mean, going to the idea of them of main channels making stuff, I mean, we haven't even got a situation now where they're actually experimenting with new things so much. I mean, the fact that FaZe got cancelled after one series, and that was a BBC Three series, and that was quite depressing. But you had, so BBC kind of experimented with things like Strange at kind of like the turn of like the last decade sort of thing. ITV sort of had, was it the series that was about the Second Coming? That was a mini series. That thing with Neil Morrissey where he'd turn invisible. Stuff like that would happen. Obviously, and then of course the BBC did things like, what's the crime time travel thing that we watched?
Oh, Crime Traveller.
Okay, that was cheesy as hell, but that, you know, that was essentially SF.
I remember at the time everyone just saying, just make Doctor Who, for God's sake.
Oh, don't forget they had Bugs as well.
Yeah.
BBC did, you know, pre-2000. They were experimenting with things, but it was very often. And to be honest, I would have thought that the simplest, easiest thing to do would be to just buy stuff from the US, because now with the internet the way it is, the hype factor involved with some series, like they would, all they'd have to say is, oh, by the way, we're going to start showing this series from blah, blah. And they'd get an audience.
Yeah.
I can only presume it must be down to people won't watch it if it's not, you know, as soon as possible. And, of course, they'll charge top dollar for that.
I suppose, I mean, they forked out for Heroes for that. But I suppose they just felt burned by Heroes. But then, to be honest, Heroes suffered as a result of a couple of things at the time, such as the writer's strike and the fact... No, was it NBC that was...
I think
airing it in the US weren't as kind to it as they could have been.
Yeah.
So, in a way, if it didn't do as well over here as it could have done, it's because there was a lot of upheaval with it in the US. That was unfortunate. Yeah. But, or maybe we should be looking at what the US networks and sort of production studios get up to in terms of what they're charging. Perhaps they're charging too much for international. Maybe that's part of the problem as well.
Well, I mean... If think about Torchwood, for example, that, you know, kind of...
I'd rather not.
But the latest season, that kind of joined with stars from America. So it got, you know, financial backing from the Americans, but it still kind of, I would actually probably say, it still retained its Britishness.
Yeah.
It retained its absolute bloody god-awfulness.
But, I mean, why can't we have more of these, you know, collaborations?
Yeah, do you know what, the whole idea though, the fact that US shows could actually be too, like, they're selling it at too high a price to overseas markets, to me also perhaps paints an interesting counter idea to some of the ideas that America is trying to impose some kind of cultural sort of hegemonic sort of imperialism on other countries. Like, actually, no, they're not, because they're just charging too much for the general populace to get access to it in other countries.
But I mean, I think to a certain extent, this is actually making our British actors move over to America more and more as well.
Yeah,
I mean, look at Hugh Laurie. Look at Andrew Lincoln.
There's certainly not the variety of roles over here in comparison to the US for actors and actresses.
I mean, as an example, you know, going back a few years now, but it was an early good example of, you know, the problem of Brit actors having to go abroad to get good roles. Look at The Wire. You had two now prominent Brit actors playing both, you know, the main character cop and one of the main drug dealers. And they were both having to put on American accents. That's mad. Why on earth were they going to, you know, having to go to America to find roles, to find proper meaty roles.
I mean, we watched Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, earlier on today, and you noticed that one of the main guys was actually Jeff from Coupling. Oh, and that reminds me that, what is it, Ben Thingamajiggy? Ben Miles from Coupling was also in a couple of Wachowski brothers' films like V Vendetta.
Pete Davenport.
Yeah, not Pete Davenport. Jack Davenport.
Jack Davenport, sorry.
Who's been in numerous different, you know, US shows
and films,
including the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes. You know. Which is a little bit weird when you see someone from a small Brit sitcom.
Yeah.
Like Coupling.
Yeah, like Coupling. You know, pop up on, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. And that is not... What?
I mean, it's like David Tennant was in the new version of Fright Night as well.
Which I have yet to see. Yeah. He's meant to be the, vampire expert?
Yeah.
Well, vampire expert in inverted commas. If you know the plot at all. Anyway, I think, basically, there's a recession on, guys. You schedulers, you, whatever you are, whoever it is that buys stuff.
We know that there's not a huge amount of cash swimming around.
At the same time, though, you'd think between yourselves, the networks in the US, our own government, internet service providers, that people would like to take measures to stop streaming illegally sort of like content that could otherwise be at least on a channel that has ads or maybe just sold on DVD a bit quicker. Or a streaming service.
Yeah, it's the MP3 problem, isn't it? Instead of seeing the internet as an opportunity to make money from, you know, what they've got. I mean, personally, I would kill for the ability to watch an American TV series with adverts over the net. I would love that.
Yeah. But I mean, everyone puts up with ads, certainly when they use services like 4OD at the moment. I'm not sure how bad a sinkhole 4OD is for Channel 4 and its subsidiaries at the moment. But at the same time, you know, I will sit through the ads so that I can get to the programme.
As long as the service works properly and you don't have to sit through another lot of ads.
Yeah.
Because it thinks you're watching something new and it's like,
I just think that there is a market for genre shows over here, as has been shown with popular cinema and other trends over here at the moment.
Yeah, and we're fine with waiting a little bit if that's what it takes.
If that's what it takes. At the same time, they stop letting Sky buy all the bloody shows. Because it's getting... I'm sorry, I'm not buying into a monopoly. It is a monopoly. I'm not taking part in it. Either give me other legitimate ways to watch these shows. I don't currently illegally stream stuff. But I am at my wit's end in regards to not doing it.
But, I mean, even people that do have Sky, the one complaint that I hear over and over and over again is that despite the fact that they've got these hundreds of channels, there's still nothing on.
As in there's just a shitload of repeats.
Yeah.
It's very hard. I will put my hands up. I do live in a Sky enabled household.
Ooh.
With everything but these sports channels, because sport is shit.
Spoken like a true nerd.
Yes. And there are things to choose from, but it's finding it, and there's actually not that much when it comes down to it. I mean, for God's sake, I'm watching Voyager still. I'm nearly finished it, but good God, that's how desperate I am.
You heard it here.
And yes, you know, there are things like that. You know, there's Arrow on Sky One at the moment, but I've not been watching that because I can't be arsed. And there's, you know, there's Fox and things like that, but it's still very much, you don't have a huge amount of genre things each week.
Actually, connected to Voyager, just £2 a month of your money could buy a new box set for Retroid to watch. Just donate £2 a month.
£2 a month, hey?
It's for a good cause. It would stop me having to put up with... oh, God.
I really don't think
I can put up with Janeway for another episode. Although, Janeway's not the bad captain. It's just...
Everyone else around her?
Everything else. Well, everyone more or less except the EMH.
Yeah, he makes things quite livable. Anyway, I think that's all we've got time for this week, as we've ranted ourselves into oblivion.
Well, my spleen is empty now.
I think mine is, at the same time that I'm still lacking in telly.
Yes, and I will just say, the two act I've had to look them up because I have a terrible memory for names, but the two actors, the two Brits, who are now actually getting a little bit of recognition, especially in Hollywood, who are in The Wire, are Dominic West and especially Idris Elba.
Yes.
Who is fantastic and he keeps cropping up in even better films. So Mr. Elba is doing very well for himself. Very good to see.
All right. Well, okay. This is officially it for this week. It's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm Paul Blewett on Twitter, and I've got our website, paul-blewett.com.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm EK6891 on Twitter. You can also check out my website, ek-creations.com. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're available to chat with you and annoy you and bore you on Facebook and Google Plus at Nerds Assemble Podcast.
And we're lovely.
Yeah, pretty lovely. Yeah. Good night.
Really.
Good night.